You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Michael Kist.
You caught me not listening again.
Benjamin Solak.
You never listen!
It's the Kist and Solak Show, presented by SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation.
You are flying high on the Kist and Solak Show. This is episode 204, brought to you by the Five Folk at SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation. I am your host, Michael Kist. Follow me on Twitter at Michael Kist NFL. That's K-I-S-T, as always. Joined by the best doggone co-host in the game, Mr. 10-Year Streak Without a Bad Day. He is Benjamin Solak. Follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, how you doing, brother?
Oh, Mike, everything is delicious. Thank you for asking. Out here just, you know, benching Nelson Agholor. Just out here, just you know how when I benched Nelson Agholor, it worked and now he's good? Just going to do that again. And so then that'll work and that'll be good.
Is that fantasy implications? Did you really pick him up in fantasy?
Oh, no, I'm talking about back in 2016 when I benched him, Mike, against the Green Bay Packers. And then it immediately improved his outlook, and he was a good player for 3 years here in Philadelphia.
So, Ben, what we're going to be doing today is we're going to be talking about another Ben. I mean, not for long. It's Ben DiNucci, but we are going to be previewing this Eagles Cowboys matchup. Before we get into the specifics of that thing, Ben, there is a bigger conversation surrounding the Eagles offense right now, and that's the return of Jason Peters and how that should affect the offensive line configuration. Mm-hmm. Essentially, what's going on is if Lane Johnson doesn't play, it's Jason Peters at left tackle, Jordan Mailata at right. If Lane Johnson does play, it would kick Mailata to the bench. So a few things to unpack here. Number one, do you stunt the growth of Jordan Mailata by robbing him valuable experience by forcing a move from left to right and then possibly all the way to the bench in this specific game? Number two, should the return of Peters even force that move to begin with? And like, as far as number one goes, I think we all remember the Andre Dillard situation at right tackle, that fiasco last year. But like, even with that, offensive line coach Jeff Stoutland is the best coach on this team at any position or level. And that's being proven by the fact that we are even having this conversation to begin with. So generally, I'm going to trust his judgment. Now, there is another question of, is it his judgment or is it Doug's judgment or is it the organization's love for Jason Peters that is dictating this move? Is it Howie? Are the orders coming on from high? Like, given the weird power structure of this front office and this coaching staff and the occasional meddling of owner Jeffrey Lurie, which I don't want to overlook at all, I don't know if I can answer that question either way, like with any kind of confidence. And to my eye, Jordan Mailata is playing better than Jason Peters was, but it's close. You need the eye test for that because their analytics are almost identical in the passing game. I do think Mailata has them by a clip, though. Peters does bring experience and intelligence to the position, which has value. But let's be real. Mailata is the future of that position for this year because there's no shot Jason Peters is getting through the rest of this thing healthy. Like, no shot.
Right.
So in that case, do you favor continuity and youth or do you go with the experience? And I'd love to have like a fire and brimstone take on this one, like many others have, but I don't think it's that straightforward. As I said, I think Mailata is playing better and should not be really getting to the bench. So he would be my choice. So I do think they are making a mistake here. Ben, your thoughts?
So it depends on what you're prioritizing and how you're doing it and so on and so forth. And there's a lot of factors. So let's start from base one. Who's better football player at left tackle, Jordan Mailata or Jason Peters? You said Mailata. I made a sound. Listen, Jason Peters got done up by Chase Young in week one, right? I mean, he just got waxed by him. Jordan Mailata is coming off a game which Kyler Fackrell beat him multiple times. So let's act like one of them has been locking up dudes and the other one hasn't, right?
Oh, that's what I mean. The analytics are exactly even in the passing game. Like, they are the same pass rush productivity metric, like on the flip side for offense.
Yeah, no, their pass block win rate, not only are they relatively equal, but it's also both extremely high, right? They're also both like above 90% in their pass block win rate, which is interesting. Who's better, Peters or Mailata? I think Peters is playing better left tackle than Mailata is right now. But I also think when Mailata is out there, the Eagles give him more help than they do when Peters is out there. And I think when you give Mailata more help, and then also add in the fact that he's Mailata and how he's playing. The protection off the left side is probably better with Mailata plus how the Eagles are slowly onboarding him versus when the Eagles are like, ah, Jason Peters, he's good. Yeah. And they just kind of chuck him out there. So, you know, okay, if you want to make the argument Peters is playing better than Mailata, whatever, whatever. I think protection's been better on the left side of the line since Mailata took over at left tackle versus the first two games when Peters was the left tackle. That's my opinion. So from there, we expound. Well, if you're looking to give less help, you know, you put Peters out there, maybe that opens up your offense a little bit more. I don't really think so. The Eagles have been going more spread recently anyway. It's not like they have elite pass-catching tight ends right now that they want to unlock. Their starting tight end is Richard Rodgers. You know, Goddard's probably not going to be back for this game. So
hey, watch your mouth about Dick Rod, all right?
Yeah. But so the point here being, it's not as, you know, Miles Sanders is going to be out. It's going to be Boston Scott. It's not as if the Eagles are wasting valuable, really valuable resources here helping out Mailata. And if you're sliding to Mailata, right, if you're sliding to the left-hand side, well, if Matt Pryor's over there, if Jack Driscoll's over there, yeah, that's a problem. And usually when Driscoll's out there, when Pryor's out there, they slide to the right if they can. Mm-hmm. But if Lane's there, right, Lane's starting right tackle, then yeah, sliding to Mailata's no problem. Of course you're going to slide. You don't want to slide to Lane anyway. Lane doesn't do well with slide protection. So I think that you can make a solid argument stem to stern that leaving Mailata at left tackle is not a measurable drop-off to the point where installing Peters at right guard and leaving Mailata at tackle is a clear improvement at your guard position. And we haven't even seen Peters take a snap at guard yet, but I'm here to tell you, he's better than Sua Peta. Sua did not have a good game against the Giants. Herbig had one of his worst games against the Giants as well, and that's a good defensive tackle front, but you just assume Peters is going to be better in there. So I'd like to see them get Mailata at left tackle, Peters at right guard, Lane at right tackle. Now, if in Dallas week, Lane's not going to go, which I think they should sit Lane and give him, you know, this week and then the bye week, time to recover, time to recuperate, then yeah, I think Peters at left tackle, Mailata at right tackle is your best tackle alignment right now. Matt Pryor, if he's anything, is a guard. He is not a tackle.
Right.
I don't, that don't bother me. Jason Peters at left tackle, Jordan Mailata at right tackle this week. But if we get back to healthy Lane and it's Peters at left tackle, Lane at right tackle, Mailata on the bench, that's a misappropriation of your resources. You can't be out here with Mailata on the bench and Sua Opeta and Nate Herbig playing at guard, because neither Sua Opeta nor Nate Herbig has played as well as Jordan Mailata has this year. And if you got Jack Driscoll on the bench as well, because they think he's a tackle, that's even, I think, a further misuse of your resources. I think Driscoll has played better than Herbig and Opeta have this year. I know people are really big on Herbig, but I he's, like, average to me. Driscoll's been, I think, impressive in what he's done at right tackle. So it's a little bit of a difference between what you expect to see in this week before the bye with Lane's health considered versus long term. And then when you throw in the development aspect of it, that can get overblown. Like, how much development is Jordan Mailata going to get from getting absolutely hammered by DeMarcus Lawrence all game? Not a lot. Like, you're not going to learn a ton. I mean, like, it's not going to bring his confidence up. But overarching, right, on the scope of a season, those snaps are beneficial. Mailata has been sitting on the bench for 2 years. Eventually, you got to put the boy in the water, sink or swim. Right. And he's largely swam through the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season. So this week, Peters left tackle. Okay. But if you're taking Mailata off the field to leave Sua Opeta or Nate Herbig on the field immediately after the bye, and obviously you might be getting Isaac Samuel back, to me, that's a bad decision. That's bad long term for you in Mailata's development, and it's bad short term for you because Mailata hasn't been that bad.
Yeah, I agree. So short term, I'm with you for this game. That's fine. And I definitely agree that they should rest Lane and give him the bye because, I mean, he played last week. He played one drive and he had to come out. Get the guy healthy and get him when you need to really get into the teeth of your schedule, which is coming up very, very soon. Let's kind of take a look at this, the rest of this Dallas defense as they pair up with the Eagles offense. The Dallas defense is 32nd in points allowed per game with 34.7, which if they keep that up, I think it may be the worst of all time. And definitely going back over the decade from what I've researched. And what's crazy about that is they have actually performed average in the red zone. It's just that teams are gifted so many drives in their territory and they are leaking yards to the tune of 400 plus per game, which is 27th in the league. Offenses have been super uber efficient against them, which is reflected in their DVOA of 30. And it's not just efficiency that's carving them up. Dallas is tied for third in allowing explosive plays of 20 yards or more. And believe it or not, although I don't know why you wouldn't, it's the run defense that ranks worst in that category, tied for most allowed with the Bengals, Texans, and the Philadelphia Football Eagles, which we'll talk about. But this should be a game where the Eagles are able to generate some splash plays. And I mean, the middle of the defense is absent for the Cowboys. The outside of the defense has been getting toasted. The safeties are meh. This defense is all edges. It's DeMarcus Lawrence. To a lesser extent, it's Alvin Smith. It was becoming Everson Griffin until he was shipped off to Detroit so they could save $3 million. That means probably Randy Gregory sees more snaps. I mean, beyond all that, they look like one of the worst coach units in the league that have players that were brought in to fit a specific scheme. And now that scheme has changed. Like, there's no effort. There's no cohesiveness. There's no toughness. There's no identity. It stinks. And it's what we and many others were warning people about, and it's actually somehow worse than that. And perhaps that would have been salvageable when the offense was putting up 40 burgers, but that's done because QB1 is hurt, and to a much lesser extent, QB2 is out. So they can't compete in these boat races, and as a result, they're getting blown up and blown out by teams like the Washington Football Team. So, Ben, like, do you see this as a challenge at all for the Eagles? And if it is a challenge, like, what does that even, like look like against this defense?
I have a question for you. You said, you know, they brought in players for a specific scheme, and then that scheme has changed. How has the scheme changed for you?
I mean, the coverages that they're running, like, they went from, like,
oh, you talked about, like, you meant, like, Chris Rashard 2019 versus Mike Nolan. Oh, I thought you meant, like, Mike Nolan 2020 to Mike Nolan 2020. And I was like, no, they won't stop doing all these things that don't work. They refuse to change. Yeah. This is the funny thing. There was a great piece on CBS Sports, Patrick Walker, from a few weeks ago, which the headline reads, Cowboys sticking with Mike Nolan after historically bad defensive start in 2020. Quote, we're staying the course, which to me is hilarious, right? Like, historically bad start. Let's change nothing. But that's how it's been for Mike Nolan right now and for the defense. So when Chris Rashard was fired and Mike Nolan was brought in, they wanted to take what Rashard was doing, which they considered simple, which there were quotes about how the Cowboys never disguised any coverages and so on and so forth. And they wanted to make that more complex. They wanted to make that more difficult to identify. A little bit more conflation, a little bit more disguising tendency, a little bit more confusion. The Cowboys defense is confused. All the opposing offenses aren't. And so fundamentally, we start at the interior and we work to the outside. They are trying to two gap on the defensive line with Tristan Hill, Antoine Woods, Neville Gallimore, and the shell of Dontari Poe.
They're out
and
of their minds.
Horrible. The Eagles are going from, I would argue, the top five defensive tackle group in New York to a bottom five defensive tackle group in the Cowboys, in the teams that they're facing week to week. So the guards really struggled, as I said, against the Giants. They're going to be better against the Cowboys because the opposing team is not nearly as good. You go to the linebacking core, which has two really big names in it, Jalen Smith and Leighton Vander Esch. I'm here to tell you, Jalen Smith has not played well since 2018. We talked about this last year. He's not a good ball player. The Eagles' passing game in 2019 against the Cowboys was find 54 and high-low him. We're going to put one route in front of him. We're going to put one route behind him, and he's got no idea what to do. And that's held through two games against the Eagles last year, many other teams last year, and through 7 weeks of the season this year. Smith is one of the worst coverage linebackers in the league right now, and Eagles fans know how frustrating and how difficult that'll be with, because we also have one of the worst coverage linebackers in the league right now. Meanwhile, Leighton Vander Esch, who's back from injury, is still playing fast, and he's still playing aggressive, and he's still willing to hit, but he and Smith need to make a lot more decisions behind a two-gapping defensive front, and they are not equipped to do so. They make poor decisions. Jalen Smith is regularly suckered in by motion, by play-action fakes. Leighton Vander Esch is constantly reacting to the first player that he sees. So if you get a jet motion guy in the backfield on the mesh point, if you start getting Jalen Hurts into the backfield, you're going to break these linebackers' brains. And especially when Vander Esch is healthy, he takes Joe Thomas off the field. Joe Thomas, the only good linebacker they got. 48 can play.
He can.
And he's off the field in base sets when Vander Esch is healthy, which he is coming into this week. You should be able to run the football against this team. They have, besides Lawrence, Alden Smith, Randy Gregory, they have smaller edges that you can move in the running game. They have poor interior defensive linemen who struggle to two-gap, and they have linebackers who don't read well. They'll be aggressive. They'll get some tackles at the line of scrimmage because they play fast, but they will give up some explosive gains. You should expect to be able to run. And then you get to the passing game, which is somehow measurably worse than the running game. They give up explosive plays at a significantly higher click than any other defense in the league. is because their corners are bad, right? Trevon Diggs is not playing well. Rookie second round pick out of Alabama. Bad. They just cut Daryl Worley, who was their starter through 4 weeks.
They tried to trade him, and everybody was like, no.
Yeah, absolutely. 0% chance. And they had Anthony Brown and Jordan Lewis both playing in starting roles opposite Trevon Diggs. Both those guys are slot corners. They could not deal with size. Chidobe Awuzie is expected to come back for this game against the Eagles. They desperately needed him. He was injured after week two, so he'll be their starting outside corner.
And he's probably, of the names that you listed, is probably the best of the bunch of those corners, right? Yeah.
He is, and he's not good.
Right.
So after 2019, it was very clear that he needs to be an off-cover zone corner. Mm-hmm. He can't play man.
Right.
And Mike Nolan sticks him in man. Mike Nolan sticks everybody in man.
Yes. Got,
yeah, they've Trevon Diggs in man covered 8 yards off the ball. It looks like Rasul Douglas, 2017 Philadelphia Eagles. Like, yeah, this guy's talented, but he can't play in this alignment.
Yeah.
Can't do it. Doesn't have the speed. Doesn't have the turn. It's a complete misappropriation of your resources. So, deep vertical is always available. Return of Jalen Reagor is extremely interesting here. The Eagles used him as a deep vertical receiver on the outside in week one. They stopped doing that in week two, and they've largely went away from that throughout the season as they've realized protection doesn't hold up for them. I think they're going to try to go back to that a little bit with Reagor, especially with Folgum filling that intermediate role for them. Reagor, they're going to look for deep speed. The Cowboys do not have a single impact safety on this roster. Xavier Woods is a box safety masquerading as a free safety. Donovan Wilson is a special teamer who's only playing because Darian Thompson looked good during camp and now looks horrible as a starter.
Yes.
The safeties have no idea where they're going at any given time. They try to rotate these guys. They're constantly in the wrong spots. They're constantly at bad leverages, bad angles. They can't tackle intermediate coming downhill. This would be a 200-yard Zach Ertz game if Zach Ertz looked like anything he's looked the past 5 years. Obviously not healthy, but like beating safeties with leverage, these guys cannot play into number two. They can't relate to routes successfully at all. They have no concept of spacing. So, yes, this should be the game where the Eagles are able to pass the football explosively. If they cannot, that's horrible, terrible, very bad news. The only way is if the Cowboys are dominating with edge pressure. DeMarcus Lawrence and Aldon Smith. That's the only answer for the Cowboys right now. Is those players regularly beating the Eagles tackles, which if it's Mailata and Peters, yeah, I mean, like that's not a great tackle set up there for Philly. If you can chip those edges, if you can slow down those edges, Wentz is going to have Folgum and Reagor regularly uncovering, and he's going to have opportunities for deep shots as well.
I remember in training camp, they cut HaHa Clinton Dix because Darian Thompson was playing freaking well. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Boy. And Darian Thompson's snap counts have gone 79%, 51%, 95%, 5%, 22%, 13%, 28%, which tells you everything you need to know about how Darian Thompson's been playing.
Absolutely. And as we take a look at the DraftKings Sportsbook official line of this game, we've seen a serious shift in just a day as it looks more and more likely that Dalton misses out with his concussion. And I've seen the news, but Ben is waving at me. We are going to save this news. We're going to tease it before the break. I know exactly what you're talking about. With this line, it has gone. Ben doesn't know what to do it himself. The Eagles were favored 7.5 points, and now it's 9 points. That changed in 24 hours. The over-under is set at 43, which is a small step down from what we saw before as well. That means Vegas is predicting a score line of Eagles 26, Cowboys 17. Do the Eagles score more than 26? Does it matter if they don't? All very good questions. I think it does depend maybe on what Dallas scores and how early those points come, despite how stinky this defense is. I'm just going to go ahead and say yes, over 26 for the Eagles. What about you, Ben? You're gonna have to focus in, brother, because this is crazy news, right?
Over 26?
Yeah,
that's a lot.
Don't be afraid to be great.
Yeah, we'll do it. Why not? Okay. I'd very much like for them to do it. I think so. I don't feel like strongly about that, but I think they can get 28.
So that's the offensive side of the ball for the Eagles. When we come back, we're gonna come back with some bombshell news that could cost the Eagles the season. That's coming up next here on the Kissed and Solak Show. And we are back here on the Kiss and Solak Show, episode 204, brought to you by the Five Pocket SB Nation, Bleeding Green Nation. Michael Kiss here with Benjamin Solak. Ben, we teased it before the break. Let's get into it. The bombshell news that could cost the Eagles this season. Eagles have placed Nate Gary on injured reserve.
And Jannard Avery.
But Nate Gary is the big one. Your brain of the defense is now out for a while. He did not practice today with an ankle is the last I saw. Now, it looks pretty bad for him, which, I mean, look, I don't want to see anybody get hurt. At the same time, are you really losing anything if you miss on
Right, this is the interesting thing. Like,
yeah.
So Nate Gary had the ankle injury. I don't remember him getting it, number one.
Right.
He played 100% of the snaps last week, right?
Thought so. I didn't.
Nate Gary played 92% of the snaps last week, which was his lowest number. But also they've kind of like, you know, been taking him off the field a little bit. Alex Singleton, man. All right. Anyway, focus. Nate Gary played 92% of the snaps. I don't remember him getting injured in the game. I don't remember him leaving with injury at all. If we're wrong on that, please let us know. So this happened, what, in practice? Again, another practice injury?
It must have, but, like, he didn't participate. I think I'm looking at the Wednesday practice report. Like, I don't think he was, like, a midweek ad. I just think that's kind of how it was. So this is from the 29th, so it was yesterday. Listen.
They throw Nate Gary and Jannard Avery on IR after the pressers. That's so annoying.
Yeah, right?
I mean, okay, maybe they didn't know, but still. Because now we can't ask.
Here's the Wednesday practice report. He didn't participate. So he picked something up during the game or early in the week doing something, and now he's just on IR? What in the hell is that?
Right. Now, I'm curious if, number one, if he's been banged up, then that is, this is literally insane.
No, we're not going to do the thing where, like, oh, he played stinky all 2019 and he had the core muscle injury. We find
because,
out. We're
okay,
like,
because I was about to say the Giants game was, I think, the best game I've seen Nate Gary play in a while.
Yeah, me too. I agree.
It was quality. Like, that guy can stay on the field. Now, obviously, the Giants have no idea how to script a passing game. But, like, against the run, he was solid. You're telling me he was banged up and he was good? How is this? Nothing about Nate Gary is understandable. Nothing is explicable. Okay.
Like, he actually did his job, which was shocking to me. But go ahead.
Nate Gary being out is interesting for the Eagles long term. Because, number one, you're getting TJ Edwards back this week. So you're still going to be basing Edwards, Duke Riley, and Alex Singleton. But with Gary out, there's more room to get a guy like Sean Bradley into the rotation or to get a guy like Davion Taylor into the rotation. Because obviously the Eagles think Nate Gary is their best linebacker. So you're not likely to take your best linebacker off the field to put your fourth best or fifth best linebacker on the field. But when the first linebacker is already gone, then there's a little bit more room. So that's number one. Number two, you cannot conceivably justify having Nate Gary on the field for his pass defense. It's impossible. And they don't try to do it. And it's not done. It can't be done.
Yeah.
Let's say you play TJ Edwards and Alex Singleton as your base Mike and your base Will, which, given how they've played the last couple weeks, that's going to be my projection for the team here. The only way it wouldn't be is if they don't think Edwards can get the signals in and then maybe they get Duke Riley. I don't know. Anyway. If your run defense remains successful with Gary gone, you now officially have zero leg to stand on. Which, yes, they've had zero leg to stand on for a while. But if you can get lined up and play the run, that's the whole point of, like, every time you try to justify Gary, every time they get asked about Gary, it's, he lines us up, he's our leader, and, you know, he's good, our part of our run defense, he's in our blitz packages and whatever, and coverage. Listen, if you remain solid against the run, they're obviously still going to be bad against the pass because their entire team is bad. But, like, Nate Gary being absent is proof of concept that he's really potentially not bringing anything to this defense, which is what I think you and I would argue. Mm-hmm. So I there's an opportunity here for the young guys, which Eagles fans have been clamoring for, and that's, you know, a good thing that hopefully they take advantage of. But there's also an opportunity here to say, listen, this is the defense. And is Nate Gary the entire problem with the defense? No. I don't think the defense is going to get straight better with Gary out there, because I don't think Nickel Robey Coleman and Jalen Mills and Alex Singleton are all going to be taking snaps. That's all going to be bad. But if the absence of Gary costs you nothing, then what is he bringing to the team? What is he bringing when he's on the field? Because it's been very hard to argue he brings much of anything thus far.
He's on a contract year, isn't he?
Yes.
Or am I tripping?
No, because he was drafted 2017.
So, yeah, this is a contract year for him. They need to find out some answers. I remember when Mike Kay suggested that they might try to extend him this season. I lost my freaking mind.
Well, why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they extend him, Mike? They've been happy with that when he's done.
But why wouldn't they extend him is a great question.
I fully expect them to extend him. They think he's a good football player.
Same. I expect them to keep Derek Barnett around forever. I expect them to keep Jalen Mills around forever.
Right, like, now, but if Nate Gary is off the field and, like, you know, I've never been rooting harder for TJ Edwards in my life, TJ Edwards plays well, it makes it easier to move on from Nate Gary, and this is depending on what happens with him. But the thing is, like, Gary isn't the worst dude in the world to have on your linebacking core. It's just if he's the third dude off. Like, he's great on special teams. If he's, like, the fourth dude, he just can't be linebacker one.
Right.
And so Right. But obviously, when he goes to get paid, he's going to want to get paid as a guy who's started for the past 2 years, which is what he's done. So, Nate Gary on injured reserve, Jannard Avery on injured reserve. Obviously, that doesn't really, you know, Jannard Avery was taking 10 snaps a game. You know, he had the really fun game against San Francisco. That was exciting, but that's clearly not really going to be him long term. Okay. The Eagles now have 4 open roster spots.
Yeah. Who are you getting? Do you know?
Well, okay, I'm just going to say one word.
How deep can you dig for guys?
I'm just going to say one word, trade. They're sitting with a bunch of open roster spots right before the trade deadline?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's not, obviously they're not going to be taking on bad contracts, but like, under what circumstances, though, would they be making a trade where they get more players than they would be offloading, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. It's only if they're trading Alshon for, like, three rookie contract practice squatters? Like, what? Like, no.
It's like a baseball deal.
Yeah, no, that doesn't make sense. That's not how it's going to be for...
Yeah.
That's not a trade. Dang it.
I've seen suggestions, you know, with linebackers. Zach Cunningham from the Houston Texans doesn't make a whole lot of sense financially, and he's also been bad this year. Avery Williamson has not been great. I don't like that trade either. Like, I really don't know. I do think they could acquire talent. I don't think it's going to be a big splash move.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, like, right, Goddard, Peters, and Rager have all been put into their practice windows. So my guess is that, you know, they've got 4 spots open. 3 of them are going to go to Rager, to Peters, and to Goddard, you know, and obviously.
And then you promote, like, T.Y. McGill or something. Like,
yeah. I'm not sure all 3 of them get activated for this week. I think Rager and Peters are expected, and Goddard, they're kind of crossing their fingers, but I would personally be surprised. But you need to have those spots open. They didn't just throw Gary and Avery on IR to open those spots. They would have, you know, like, cut JJ or somebody. Please, God, cut JJ. But like, that's probably where those spots are going to go. So 4 roster spots open sounds more exciting than it is.
Sad. All right, so we'll guess we'll kind of finish up this preview here. I mean, with the Dallas offense, Eagles defense, Dallas offense, man, I could cite a bunch of rankings and whatnot like I did for the defense, but none of it matters because none of it applies. No Dak, now no Dalton. This offensive line is badly banged up. Speaking of that, though, Zach Martin returning is big for the offensive line. I mean, they can't protect the quarterback before or after the play. Last week, Andy Dalton was pressured on 46% of his dropbacks and got his helmet sent to the moon. DiNucci was pressured on 67% of his dropbacks. Even with Martin coming back, I think this is a feast game for the Eagles' defensive line. PFF agrees, as the Eagles have their 4th biggest advantage in the trenches against the pass when looking at the Week 8 slate here. But Ben, when I talked about it with Mark Schofield on the QB Factor, he admitted that, like, you usually wouldn't want to blitz a rookie in this scenario because you give him hot reads to throw to early and whatnot and kind of give him some outs. But in this one, he said you might as well stack the box and bring the house. Do you think we see that, or do you think we see a game where Jim Schwartz basically sits on his hands and says, look, if you can churn out a 14-play scoring drive with Ben DiNucci and the dried-out husk of what was once Ezekiel Elliott, be my guest, because I'm betting against that all day, right?
Yeah, it's interesting because we don't know exactly what the Ben DiNucci offense is going to look like for the Cowboys. Were I a betting man, they're going to try to run the football a lot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's going to be the approach. Ben DiNucci at JMU had himself a little, you know, red zone scamper package, right? A little zone read, a little power read, a little fun stuff. Because he's not slow.
He can boogie.
He can wiggle a little bit. So I would guess heavy DiNucci usage. Worth noting that they've been integrating Tony Pollard a lot more into the offense recently, especially with the absence of Dak Prescott.
It hasn't been great, right? Like, statistically anyway.
No, I mean, they're trying to get him some like explosive plays with underneath targets, which I don't know. Just have somebody throw it up to Michael Gallup. It's a higher percentage play. Like, this is just not difficult, but they're making it hard for themselves. And then they try to run it with Pollard on some zone stuff. And he's, I think, been like semi-successful there, but their offensive line is really struggling. So that's been tough for them. With no Blake Jarwin, he was obviously injured to start the year. They can't really go as heavy as they want to, but I would not be surprised to see some usage of 12 personnel, some usage of some tight alignments, which Kellen Moore has always done, in the event to get some extra angles, get some extra blocks. And then, Jim Schwartz is going to do what he always does, and what he especially does against bad quarterbacks, which is he's going to load the box and he's going to dare them to throw the football on them. Now, the Eagles' corners are ill-equipped to deal with the Cowboys' receivers, so this is a good matchup on paper because they're going to hammer this Cowboys offensive line, and they are going to spank Ben DiNucci, right? Who is not a calm person in the pocket by any stretch of the imagination. Ben DiNucci freaks out under pressure. And he's a seventh round rookie from an FCS program. That's right, not to be expected.
It. Yeah.
The Cowboys have gone through 11 offensive line combinations so far this season, per Bob Sturm of The Athletic, which is second only to the Eagles' 14. That's not an unofficial stat, but it probably is. Zach Martin potentially coming back means you're looking at Cam Irving at left tackle. Connor Williams, their starting left guard, still holding down that spot. Tyler Biadasz, their rookie out of Wisconsin, who they got trading up with the Eagles, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Their starting center. Zach Martin at right guard and Terrence Steele at right tackle. Williams, Biadasz, and Martin on the interior, not too shabby. Fletcher Cox usually has Zach Martin's number a little bit. It's always been a great matchup, so I think they'll see an advantage there. Left tackle, Cameron Irvin. Right tackle, Terrence Steele. Brother. Brandon Graham's going to have 2.5 sacks.
Yeah,
I'm not kidding.
Brandon Graham is playing at a great level this year.
Brandon Graham, dude, it's going to be a double-digit sack year for Brandon Graham. He's finally going to get one. I have to believe.
Four of them should come against Terrence Steele.
I think he's going to wax Terrence Steele. I think he's going to beat him around the yard. It's worth noting that Ezekiel Elliott has historically been an Eagles killer. In 2016, 27 carries for 103 yards. 2018, 19 carries for 151 yards. 28 carries for 113 yards. They use him a ton against the Eagles. They gave him 13 targets in 2018 as well. 22 carries for 111 yards and a touchdown in 2019. But then, in that final game of the year, when Prescott was hurt, he had 13 carries for 47 yards.
Right.
They suffocated him.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We're going to make you beat us somewhere else. Right. And you have the opportunity to do that again with DiNucci as the starting quarterback. So they're going to load the box. Darius Slay, I imagine, will trap with Amari Cooper. He used to do that when he was in Detroit, which is going to give you Nickel Robey Coleman or Avante Maddox. Is Maddox available?
Yep. Yep. He started.
Yeah, that gives you Maddox on Michael Gallup. Gallup should get 15 targets. You're talking about Nickel Robey Coleman or Cravon LeBlanc on CeeDee Lamb. It's another big opportunity. So they're going to load the box. They're going to take away Elliott. And they're going to tell DiNucci, beat us with your wide receivers. DiNucci is willing to throw into coverage. And he's going to be willing to get rid of the ball hot, quick as well. All it takes is one stupid missed tackle. And this is all of a sudden, 7-0 on the opening drive with a 74-yard bomb to Michael Gallup.
And the world's ending, yeah.
Right. That's the thing is they're, in most realities, take away the running game. The Cowboys are going to stay run heavy on early downs because they're terrified and they always do that. You're going to get them in the long and lay down in distance. You're going to blitz DiNucci. You're going to rush with four. You're going to win on the outside and you're going to sack him. That's probably what's going to happen. But if the Cowboys are smart, slash DiNucci, has his druthers, he goes for it, they're going to get quick passes on early downs, and they're going to tell Lamb, Cooper, and Gallup, be better than that secondary. And they are, besides Slay. They're much better. This is the best wide receiver core in the league against one of the worst secondaries in the league. So, this can go left quick.
Yeah.
And it kind of depends on if the Cowboys are willing to let DiNucci rip for better or for worse. I don't think they will, because I think it's Jerry Jones, and he's obsessed with Ezekiel Elliott and whatever. But there is that reality, and we should be fearful of that, because that'll make this thing a boat race, and that does not suit the Eagles well.
Well, Joe Webb action. I know that's
how
the
dare you.
I know that's the name on a lot of people's lips right now. But who was Joe Webb last year? It was it wasn't Luke Falk. No, it wasn't David Fales because he was hurt. It was Luke Falk. That's what everybody thought. He just got absolutely destroyed. I can't imagine the spike in difficulty and play speed coming from James Madison and then coming into the NFL against the Washington defensive line that is just wood chipping your offensive line as you drop back and try to say, okay, left foot, right foot, left foot, look here. Okay, shoulders set. All right, cool. terrifying.
His process is a little bit segmented right now. It's a little bit linear.
I said you could hear him working through his drop mechanics through the film. It was very apparent. He was very aware of what
And the
he
thing
was
is, he's willing to, get to his hot read against the blitz and stuff like that. It's just, it definitely needs to speed up by multiple clicks, number one. And then number two, if you pressure him, he will make prayer throws. And that's the opportunity for interceptions. And the turnover battle is really big here. Philadelphia had 3 turnovers against the Giants, and that's the only reason why they hung around in that game. Short fields are critical for the Eagles' offense, not to mention capitalizing on those short fields in the red zone, which, that red zone performance against the Giants was bad. I think it was an aberration. I kind of went through numbers and film, and I think they're going to be okay. Yeah. But you got to be able to capitalize because you're going to get turnovers. Ezekiel Elliott is fumbling at an unbelievable click. And Ben DiNucci is going to absolutely fumble the football when he's sacked, or he's going to throw a pick. Like that, you know, with a young quarterback like this, he's not going to be able to play mistake-free, especially on a defense as pressure-oriented as the Eagles.
So let's give our final predictions here. We both said the over for the Eagles at 26. I'm going to say it's 27-6 Eagles. I think only 6 points in this Cowboys offense. And they come in like weird ways, you know, like a pass interference and you set up for a field goal.
There's no way the Cowboys only score 6. This really? Is the Eagles defense we're talking about. Come on.
I know. It'll be a weird one where like they put up like 30 for no reason. No. What do you think though? How many points do you think they put up?
13.
Okay. 15? I could see. Yeah, so a touchdown teams. And 2 field goals? Like you may, you're expecting a turnover from Carson Wentz? Is that what you're saying?
That's very possible. I also, I'm telling you, man, like brace yourself for,
I agree.
You know, 3-step drop, quick slant to CD Lamb, Nickel Robey Coleman's in a different zip code, and Ronnie McLeod has no idea how to take an angle because he's 30.
Yeah.
And like, that's going to be a big play. This.
Wow, there's a stray bullet on Ronnie McLeod there.
Jesus. I'll put it to you this way. When you watch the Dalton Cowboys,
yeah,
you realize the extent to which it is difficult to not get an explosive passing play or two out of this receiving core. Dalton had to work hard to miss Amari Cooper 17 yards. You know what I mean? Like, DiNucci can make that throw. He's going to try to 10 times. 9 times, he isn't going to have time. 9 times, he's going to have pressure, and he's going to have guys in his lap. He's going to have to move off it or whatever. But the one time it's open, it's going to be open. And this is the Eagles' secondary. They are not trustworthy, right? I mean, like, any time Daniel Jones had time, Sterling Shepard just broke Jalen Mills' ankles. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, it's just that this team lives and dies by pressure, and you just can't get pressure that consistently to always eliminate the big play.
Here's a fun alternate universe hypothetical I want to throw
your
way.
Oh, this doesn't sound like it's going to be fun.
Let's say in an alternate universe that the Dallas Cowboys traded for Ryan Fitzpatrick, which is what I thought they should try, and I thought the Dolphins should hang up, right? Who else but Ryan Fitzpatrick to come in and save this freaking offense and just chuck it to the wide receivers that they have there? How many points do the Cowboys score in this game if Ryan Fitzpatrick, who is a Jim Schwartz killer, is starting for the Cowboys today?
How many points
are you saying? Just take swap Ben, but everything the same. Take Ben DiNucci out, put in Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Probably like 20 something, right? Ooh. Like mid 20s, high
20s. Yeah, okay.
Because the tackles are still so bad.
True.
Right.
But like Ryan Fitzpatrick just seeing one-on-one on the outside and saying, here we go.
That
was what they did against Brian Allen against the San Francisco 49ers. Fitzpatrick lit up the 49ers just doing that.
I really want to see Josh Sweat sack Ben DiNucci. Because Ben DiNucci's like 6'3", but he's like 6'3", 2-0 something. He's like a thin dude. You know what I mean? He's got like NFL weight room. It's got like a couple years. And Josh Sweat is just like big. And I think that I will enjoy, like, because you're gonna get the camera angle, and Sweat's gonna be the right defensive end. He's gonna get around Cameron Irving, and he's just gonna be just like this behemoth behind Ben DiNucci, who's like just got to the top of his drop. He's like, all right, and now process. Then he's gonna get his bell rung by Sweat. I think that my like bold prediction of the game is that, you know, I think the Eagles sack DiNucci 4 or 5 times, and I think Grams gets
at least
2. I think Barnett gets 1. I think Sweat gets 1. I think they're gonna be really productive off the edges. These tackles are horrible, and they're gonna focus on getting the rush from there. DiNucci can scramble off that, but I just don't think it's gonna be consistent enough. But either way, I think like 28-13, 28-16.
That's fine.
28 trusts the Eagles to score a lot of touchdowns.
Yeah.
27-13, 28-16. That's
what I think they cover comfortably for giving gambling advice.
Oh, I'm not betting this game. I cannot emotionally deal with betting this game and then watching the Eagles subsequently lose to Ben DiNucci while I also lose money.
I'll keep it real with you. I haven't bet anything Eagles related since they lost the Super Bowl to the Patriots. I haven't touched it. Never. I've not made a bet on
anytime I need the Eagles to win a game, I bet against them.
Tremendous.
Without fail. Only bet I've got correctly so far this year was, I think, the Steelers game. And I was like, I'll bet this. And then, like, they got the ball left down 2 with 6 minutes left. I was like, there's no way. And then Chase Claypool touchdown, they covered.
I love it. Well, I don't love it. That was, that sucked, but it was a fun game.
Hopefully beat the Cowboys, 3-4-1,
baby.
Division lead, let's buyers go. Of the trade deadline, are you with me?
We are contenders at that point, and no one can say anything about it. Ben, say goodbye to the gentle listeners. I think we did the thing.
Thank you, as always, for listening to the Kissed and Soul Eye Show here on BGN Radio. We do appreciate you swinging by. The Eagles getting healthier before the bye week. Divisional showdown, Sunday night football, prime time yet again. You love to see it. It's actually terrible. I wish it wasn't happening.
Yeah. Or you apologize for the mess.
Yep. Dallas Cowboys, Sunday night football, the Eagles. It's in Dallas? In Philadelphia. It's in Philadelphia.
Yeah. That's in Philadelphia.
It's in Philadelphia. In Philadelphia, Sunday night football. It's going to be a good time. If you go, please make sure you are safe and healthy. The bye week upcoming, if the Eagles win this, they are in sole possession of the lead of the NFC East, which is the worst participation trophy of all time. If you've enjoyed the show, please rate, review, and subscribe on whatever app you listen to your podcasts. We haven't read reviews in a while, Mike. That might be a bye week activity for us. That'll be a fun time.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah, if you want to. Bye week review week, read week, talk about things week. Yeah, so if you've left a review and we haven't gotten to it, then we'll read it during the bye week. And if you have not put one but have been thinking about it, get it in so we can read it on our next show. And we'll inform you of the entire bye week schedule as it crystallizes in the post game of the Cowboys-Eagles game, which we will be there for you if you are up at 2 a.m. like us. In the immediate wake of Sunday Night Football, that show will be available for you bright and early on Monday morning. He's Michael Kist on Twitter, at Michael Kist NFL, it's K-I-S-T-I. I've been Benjamin Solak on Twitter, at Benjamin Solak. Okay. Thank you for listening.
We all we got. We all we need. Fly, Eagles, fly.
B-G-N.